May we gather in one-mindedness. May we flatten all hierarchy. May we live and breathe gratitude and give thanks for the gift of life. And in my native tongue, I'd like to thank you for having me today. Hawa. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brandy.
It was beautiful.
And I would like to add, just before I introduce Melissa, that I live on the traditional unceded territory of the Algonquin people in Ontario. And I commit to continue living lightly upon the earth, relying on solar power and collected rainwater. I honor this land, its original caretakers, and the Indigenous presence that currently continues to exist in this region. I express my appreciation for the teachings that have been most generously offered to me directly from the trees, the stone, and the moose, one of whom visited me a couple of days ago. May the many gifts I receive in the form of the softness of moss, the vastness of a star-filled sky, and comfort of clear flowing water continue to spark my desire to bring an enactment of nature's lessons on inclusion and equity as we endeavor to confront ableism, racism, colonialism, and other forms of discrimination as we recognize everyone's place in the natural world and within our programs at EcoWisdom. Thank you. And now I would like to introduce our very special guest, Dr. Melissa Ming Fuentes, who recently gave a workshop to our nature and forest therapy guides on the nervous system, ways to manage stress in the nervous system, and also the impacts of discrimination on the nervous system. And this was a great resource for our nature and forest therapy guides as we endeavor to make our programs inclusive to everyone. It is my pleasure to introduce to you today our EcoWisdom guest educator, Dr. Melissa Ming Fuentes. Melissa is an exceptional experienced clinical psychologist with a PhD in psychology who specializes in trauma-informed mindfulness, meditation, and yoga. With her expertise in both Eastern and Western healing modalities, Melissa believes that we all have an innate capacity for empowered and resilient living, and that with the right combination of supports, tools, and commitment, we can all find our way to a place of growth and transformation. Melissa has nearly 20 years of experience working with survivors of various kinds of trauma, including those who have been marginalized or harmed due to aspects of their identity, such as gender, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, socioeconomic status, neurodiversity, religion, as well as visible and non-visible disabilities. I am incredibly impressed by Melissa and the way she is able to seamlessly weave together compassion knowledge that is evidence-based and well-documented in the biological, social, and psychological sciences. Melissa has authored over 60 peer-reviewed publications and educational products in the area of trauma and recovery. I have been honored to know Melissa for several years now, and in fact, she and I met while we were taking the mindfulness meditation teacher certification training led by Tara Brack and Jack Kornfield, a training that includes a six-month unit on diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility. I have deeply appreciated Melissa's receptivity to learning more about accessibility for those of us living with disability, and also the ways that she has generously shared her wisdom and analysis as it relates to equity for members of Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities. It is with a great sense of gratitude that I welcome Melissa to join us in this conversation today, to speak to us on matters that are so important as we work as nature and forest therapy guides at EcoWisdom, and within our work, within our community, we attempt to make room for everyone within our Mindful Nature Connection programs. And this includes people who may live with disability or chronic illness or have trauma histories or be gender diverse, or perhaps they're members of BIPOC communities or multiple identities here listed in here. And so it is such a delight and so important to have you join us in this conversation. Thank you so much for being here, Melissa.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and it really is a true honor to be here with all of you, just this incredible community of people so dedicated to serving these communities and doing important work. And I just want to take a moment to do a bit of an acknowledgement, gratitude of my own. So I want to acknowledge that I live in Durham, North Carolina, in the United States, which was originally the territory of several Native nations, including the Tutelo and Saponi-speaking peoples. And many of those communities were displaced or killed through war, disease, and colonial expansion. And today, the area is surrounded by contemporary Native nations, the descendants of the Tutelo, Saponi, and other indigenous peoples who survived early colonization. And these nations include the Halawa Saponi, the Saponi, and the Okanichi band of Saponi. I also want to acknowledge, honor, and respect the diverse history of other indigenous peoples in North Carolina and recognize their continuing connections to this land, the water, culture, and pay respect to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Also want to acknowledge the overlapping histories of this land, including past violence and ongoing harm produced by the legacy of racialized slavery and oppression here. And also in general want to express my acknowledgement and gratitude to my own ancestors and the ancestors of others who came before us and fought very hard, often with minimal resources, for justice and equality and respectful and reciprocal relationships to the land and each other. And I want to acknowledge all of my teachers, mentors, family, loved ones, clients, all of the elements of the earth and all the beings here. And want to acknowledge all of you, as you too are my teachers and inspirations, and anyone who might be listening, for your dedication and willingness to learn and serve the communities that you do.
Thank you so much for that. So I would like to offer a sort of a jumping off point. Is that okay, Charlotte?
Yes.
Yeah.
In a safe place to jump.
Okay. So in our Nature and Forest Therapy Guide training program, you know, it's fairly comprehensive. We talk about, we have a whole unit on ecology, another on land-based spiritualities, and a whole unit on mindfulness. And that's where we start talking about, you know, the nervous system. And we do an online retreat. And that's when Melissa came and did her workshop with us as part of that. And I think it's important, you know, that we understand that, you know, the scientific literature shows us that both mindfulness and forest bathing or mindful nature connection can, you know, help us, you know, resource in terms of our nervous system, sort of regulate. But I thought maybe we could start with Melissa, you sort of giving us like a framework for understanding for us and for the listeners. What is the nervous system, and how can we sort of understand the nervous system? Maybe you could reference the parasympathetic and sympathetic, and maybe the window of tolerance. Can you give us like a sort of a framework for understanding the nervous system?
Sure. And I really love talking about this because I think it provides a very non-judgmental and compassionate framework for understanding our bodies and our minds and how we respond to stressors in our environment. So in all mammals, I'll say, and in humans particularly, we have two branches of the nervous system that have very important responsibilities. One branch is the parasympathetic part of the nervous system. Some people refer to that as the rest and digest part of the nervous system because it's the part of the nervous system that puts the brakes on our stress response. the sympathetic nervous system is the branch that mobilizes our stress response. Sometimes we think about stress as something negative or something that needs to be managed. And while that sometimes is the case, we actually do need a part of our bodies to be mobilized in the face of stressors, regardless of how big or small or they might be. So the sympathetic system is the part that does mobilize us to respond to stressors that put us outside of what we can tolerate in that moment. Now, it's not because of some deficiency in us that that mobilization is required. It is because of the nature of the stressor. And oftentimes, the stress responses that get mobilized are things like setting a boundary or making a request. And we could think of that as sort of a fight response. A flight response might be withdrawing from a situation, removing yourself, taking some quiet time. More of a freeze response might be being very quiet, not saying anything. More of a fawn response might be really trying to appease or pacify or de-escalate someone who is being really aggressive towards you. And sometimes people think that some of those responses are better than the other, but there's no hierarchy. They're actually all valid. There is a time and a place for all of them. And so in order to build and maintain resilient nervous systems, and therefore be resilient beings in the world, we want to be able to have access to all four of those stress responses, and also to be able to come back down to more of a baseline level after that stressor is over. So the reason why this is important is that we ideally would like to stay within what many people refer to as the window of tolerance a lot of the time. The window of tolerance, if I could sort of boil it down into some descriptors, it's like a state of being in which you are calm but not tired, you're alert but not anxious, you're connected and you're able to regulate. And there are strategies and skills you can build to widen your window. So it's not like if in this moment you feel like you have a very narrow window of tolerance, it doesn't take you a lot to not feel calm or not feel anxious, or if it doesn't take a lot to put you into anxiety or to put you into more of a stress mode, you can build that tolerance. You can widen that window through things like what Carrie mentioned, nature-based mindfulness, mindful movement, forest bathing. And then unfortunately, there are things that can decrease our window, like chronic stress, like trauma. So Dan Siegel refers to the window of tolerance as the river of integration, a place of harmony and flow and ease. And I like this metaphor because he also talks about how outside of that river of integration, of harmony and flow and ease, we have two banks. One is a more chaotic, turbulent, unstable, out of control bank, which some people scientifically would probably refer to as hyper arousal, which I'll explain more in a moment. And the other bank of the river is more of a rigid kind of state. There's stuckness, there's stagnancy, and that's referred to as more of a hypo arousal kind of state. So the sympathetic nervous system, the one that mobilizes your stress response, is the part of the nervous system that would put you into either hyper or hypo arousal. And the sympathetic nervous system is the part that would bring you back into your window of tolerance. So if you think about this window of tolerance as this easily flowing river and then these two banks outside of the river, before you get to full-fledged hyper arousal or hypo arousal, you can also experience dysregulation. So it's not like you just go from your window of tolerance to complete hyper arousal or hypo arousal. There is a sort of in-between state. But just to give you a sense of what that could look like, a hyper arousal state is something like extreme anxiety or rage, feeling overwhelmed by threats, a lot of agitation, maybe even impulsivity, a lot of not feeling in control, maybe very reckless behavior. It could be even be something like a panic attack, just very agitated, increased heart rate. There could be a change in the tone of your skin, often in increased breathing. Whereas something on the hypoarousal end would look more like disconnection, maybe memory loss, feeling numb or shut down, very zoned out, maybe even losing track of time, feeling spacey or sluggish, and perhaps more of a decreased heart rate, more of a pale tone. Sometimes people will even have bluish lips. Decreased breath pattern. Of course, there's some individual variation, and that's not how it looks like for everyone, but I do think it can be an important strategy for building your window of tolerance to start recognizing for your own self what are some signs that you're veering outside of your window, and what personalized strategies can you use to come back into that window.
I just wanted to jump in and offer a couple of like real life examples of what, you know, has come up in our conversations with participants. And then I want to invite Brandy and Karma if they have examples related to nature connection, offering some calming or regulating sort of effects for them or in people that they've guided. So I guess the first thing I want to say is that we've noticed in our programming that sometimes people are getting in touch with what can be really challenging emotions. For example, we might have we do a lot of mirror neuron activation with the videos. So it might be my hand on the bark or my feet on the moss. So, well, for many people, that can be like a real visceral sensory experience and pleasing. For some people, it really puts them in touch with grief, things that they can no longer do, engage in. They can no longer do these things. And so, or I remember one was a video of in a canoe going through a wetland, and somebody was saying, oh, it's beautiful and it's lovely, and I'm experiencing some grief. And so what we do in the nature connection programs is we honor all of the range of emotions. So I think and then sometimes it comes up after a little bit of time. And the programs we run, the Accessible Nature Wellbeing program model is actually 2.5 hours. So we're together in community over time, and the connection goes deeper. And I think that window of tolerance broadens so that people do get in touch with these deeper, more difficult, we call them complex emotions. So we just validate, right, as facilitators of a program. But it's something we definitely have observed in the program is that people are, because we're not saying you're not to have grief, right? We're trying to encourage moments of relief and regulation that then opens that window of tolerance so people can have those moments of pleasure, moments of social connection, and acknowledging and sharing feelings of grief in a context where they feel comfortable. One thing I wanted to say. And then as you were describing the kinds of symptoms or signs of dysregulation, you know, this is something that we teach our guides, because if we notice, you know, I remember, you know, for an in-person program, and this was a group, and this one person had never done forest bathing, and I could tell from her body language, you know, her arms were crossed, she was kind of like moving back and forth, like fidgety. And I'm like, okay, let's begin with how would you feel about beginning with, And then I offered like a grounding exercise to sort of, again, offer the resources and expand that window of tolerance. And that brought that person back into a state of regulation. So it's interesting to hear you talk about these things and then how we're seeing it play out as guides, but also in our participants. And I just want to pass it on and open it up. Brandy, did you have anything you want to share? And then we'll go to Karma.
Yeah, with regards to what you were saying, and Melissa as well, I do really think that there is a place for holding that grief, especially when it, you know, having the lived experience of a disability now for almost 30 years. When I first started this program, I was absolutely amazed at the feelings that did start to come out. These were things that I thought I was okay with, you know, for all these years of being in a wheelchair. But when we would did the mirroring and having you touching the bark and like having your feet in that cold, beautiful river, I was amazed at the feelings it brought up in me. There was a lot of grief. There was a lot of like feeling like, I remember when I was young and nature was so important to me and I would run in the dirt and just have so much fun. And now, of course, I can't do that. But along with that, there was so much beauty and being able to see that this nature is also turning around and helping me with things like calming my nervous system and helping other people that I can see when I'm, you know, walking people through these meditations. One specific example was I just had a bit of an event in August where I was hospitalized. We thought it was like a heart complication. And when they finally moved me to a room where there was a beautiful tree outside of my room, I can't believe the difference that made. I sat with that tree, watched the sun set on it morning and night, and put all of this into practice and just sat there with that tree. And I asked that tree to look after me. And I you know, gave that tree, said, may you be well as well. And together we were friends in that hospital room. And it works. It's beautiful. It's a very beautiful experience. Yeah.
I wanted to just comment on honoring grief, because a lot of things in the model, as you were talking about problems, you see the commercials coming up for this, take that, for this, take that, or even people questioning us when we're talking about positive things. That we have to take time to honor that a person might feel, since they've lost their sight, they really don't want to live and really be able to hear what they're saying rather than someone saying, you know about nature. You should be able to help, you know, make the person feel happier. And I think that just the feeling, being grounded and being able to hear someone's grief then helps to move to that next point of the next point in the window where you can see hope and you can see gratitude. But I thank you for emphasizing that living with the grief or helping someone who's dealing with the grief live with it rather than saying, you should be getting beyond that, you know. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Thank you.